ーション。
Welcome to the land of long live play, where greatness is always waiting. Welcome to the PlayStation experience. Joining me as always is the Secretary of Spoil, Miss Haley Nicole Miller. How you doing, Haley?
It's daylight savings time.
Yeah, it's rough.
I almost thought you forgot to like change your clocks because I was like, you're usually up by like 5 and it was 7. I don't know why I keep looking at my wrist. It was like 7:30 before you messaged me. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it was rough because I had to, I was painting a driveway yesterday. You know, every Saturday I do errands and chores for my grandmother. And after that, I take my kids wherever they want to go so they can have a little bit of fun. So after painting a driveway and taking them wherever they want to go so they can have a little bit of fun, like going to like Target and stuff, letting them go shop around. Cause they also do chores for their grandmother and their grandmother gives them a little bit of money for that. After doing all that stuff, I was beat. So when I got home, I think I played a little bit of WB 2K. Well, like, by the way, we're getting into what we've done this week so far.
Yeah.
I played a little bit of 2K, which I still love. It's a great game. It's way better than the last ones.
Because they skipped last year, but I've seen Greg Miller on Twitter. Speaking of Greg Miller, I'll get to that in a second. But like, I've seen Greg on Twitter just mentioning how much fun he's having with it. So,
yeah, it's good. It's really good. I'm playing the Universe mode, which is essentially the story mode where you can just pick a wrestler and do their story. And I got excited because I'm playing as Big E, who got injured this week. You know, heal up soon, Big E. He's a really good wrestler.
I saw you retweet the video. I don't know who he is, but I hope he's really gets better soon.
Super nice guy. I can tell you this because my Twitter name, Big Meaty Man Slapping Meat, that came from Big E.
Okay, but that's not your Twitter name. That's your Discord name. Yeah,
Discord name. Same shit. Yeah, my Discord name.
I think people would have several questions if you suddenly changed your Twitter handle to Big Meaty Men Slapping Meat.
They would lose it. But yes, the whole video and stuff like that of that came from Big E. That was Big E saying that. So I'm playing the story mode as him. And they have a big event in WWE called Money in the Bank. And I got to that pay-per-view, I'm excited. Like, oh, am I going to be in Money in the Bank? Am I going to have a chance to go for the title and doing this big title match thing to get the belt? No, I was not booked to be in Money in the Bank, the match. I was booked to be in the title match versus Brock Lesnar. And it was cool, but I'm like, damn, I wanted to be in the Money in the Bank. I wanted to win the Money in the Bank briefcase. But I beat Brock Lesnar. I am now the WWE champion. And it's pretty cool. I'm excited. I love it. It's a great game. It looks super beautiful. I highly recommend it for anybody who likes wrestling games. And if you're not even a WWE fan, the fans of AEW have basically created AEW in the game. you can play as AEW wrestlers and use AEW moves. You can download their arenas and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's cool. I'm also still playing Forbidden West. Taking my time with it because I'm pretty far now. I'll say a little bit more than it, probably like halfway, maybe a little bit more.
So I won't make any glaring spoilers, but just so I know quest-wise where about you are, how many of the subroutines have you collected?
Which one?
How many of the subroutines have you collected?
I don't know what the hell that is.
Like the functions of Gaia?
Oh, don't think I collected any of them yet. I've gotten past that part where she tells you what you got to do, but you know, the part where you meet with her and she tells you what you have to do and the whole thing like that. But
okay, so here's a better way to describe this. How many of the special tools do you have? Like the ability to breathe underwater and stuff like that. How many?
None of those yet. You know, I the part where she tells you you have to go to these certain areas right after you get your base.
Sir, you are not even halfway yet.
That's not even halfway?
No.
Well, I'm playing a lot of side quests.
Yeah.
And see, once she told me that, I've just been playing side quests ever since then because the side quests are so engrossing. Yeah. Like there's one, not to get into spoilers, but this guy gets accused of murder and you have to go figure it out. And if you don't figure out, the guy just, they're going to put a sentence in him to death. And it's like a whole story behind it and stuff like that.
That quest is good because it's a callback to the first game.
Yeah, there's a lot of side quests like you think it's going in one direction, it goes a completely other direction, and then you kind of get engrossed in that story, and it's so fun. It makes side quests feel important. Ghost of Tsushima did a great job with that as well. Well, if it felt like you didn't do the side quest, you was affecting the world. And I don't know if that plays a part in this game, like whether you don't have to spoil it, but does that affect the end game if you don't do certain side quests or like?
No. So the light spoilers for Horizon Zero Dawn, not Forbidden West. I'm not spoiling Forbidden West for anyone, but for Zero Dawn, which is 5 years old at this point, so I feel like I can do so. Unlike Zero Dawn's ending, where like doing side quests affects who shows up to help you at the end of the game, Forbidden West does not do that. There is only one character who is possible to not show up at the end of for the final mission, and that is a choice you directly make during your main story mission. And that's all I'm going to say because I don't want to spoil anything.
Okay. I thought it'd been cool if they would have had it like, okay, if you don't save these certain people, they just won't show up in the game anymore. But it's fine. It's fine either way. But the side quests are so engrossing and they make you feel like they're important. So I've been excited to do them. I've been playing other games too, but I haven't played them enough to like
give a full opinion. What else you been playing?
I played a little bit of Elden Ring. I like that so far, but I like it so much I kind of like was like, I don't want to get into this until I beat Forbidden West, because if I get into it now, I'm going to stop playing Forbidden West, and I'm not going to be, Kitty.
Yeah, Kitty, who was standing in my, sorry to interrupt you, staring in my doorway, giving me the death stare, and I was like, you know you're a lot up on the bed, but anyways, continue.
But yeah, I was enjoying my time with it, but at the same time, I was like, if I start playing this now, I'm not going to get as much as I want to get out of Forbidden West. I want to just stop playing Forbidden West and then I'm going to get lost and I'm not going to finish it. So I said, let me finish Forbidden West first. Mm-hmm. And the other game I've been playing is I played a little bit of Gran Turismo.
Nice. How you liking that?
Beautiful game. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. But I kind of wanted a racing game for PS5 to play, and I think it looks great. A lot of customization options on it. I always like the Gran Turismo games and stuff like that. So once I get more time, I will dive in both of those games a lot more.
Yeah, nice, nice.
So what are you playing, Haley, and what are you watching? Because I know you're going to get into what you're watching.
Yeah, quickly I'll get into what I've been watching. I finished CSI, all 15 seasons. That's 336 episodes in less than 3 months.
Jesus. Is there more seasons or did they end the show already?
So the original CSI ended in 2015, but there's now CSI Vegas, which is a sequel series that for the first season, at least, has Grissom and Sarah and Hodges and Brass, I think, as well, returning. I have not watched CSI Vegas yet. I'd have to buy it. Actually, it might be on Paramount Plus, which we'll get into that. I'll be getting a trial of that later.
I'm almost certain it's on Paramount Plus.
It should be. It's a CBS show. anyways, so I finished that, but like the sequel series takes place a couple of years later And instead of being like a new case every week, the show's 10 episode format follows one case, as I understand it. So for season two, Grissom and Sarah will not be returning. However, Catherine will be returning, which is interesting. So I think they're going to like rotate cast members out. It'll be interesting. I also saw The Batman.
What did you think?
I fucking loved that movie. That movie was incredible. 10 out of 10, best Batman movie.
Wow. That's high praise. I liked it a lot, too. I liked it a lot. It's really good. Catwoman, amazing. That woman is gorgeous. She looks like the comic book version of Catwoman.
Zoe Kravitz is great.
Yeah, she looks exactly like the comic book version of Catwoman, which is...
As Selina Kyle. I want to say something, but I don't want to spoil the movie. I'll talk to you about it after because I know you've seen it. But it was just surprising to me. That's all. And then the other thing I'll say, this is not a spoiler. There's nothing about this in the movie. So do not worry. I'm not actually spoiling the movie. But it kind of feels like the world they're setting up, they're going to do like an actual movie version of Court of Owls, which is great. I think they might have said that. Maybe in interviews, but like there's like, I'm not spoiling the movie. Like, so just so people know.
Oh, by the way, Haley.
Yeah.
CSI is 100% on Paramount Plus.
The new one, CSI Vegas.
It has season one, season two, and season 15 for CSI. And let me look up CSI Vegas. I think I just saw CSI Vegas.
I mean, okay, but CSI you're looking at, I own it all. I can watch that anytime I want.
And season one of CSI Vegas is on Paramount Plus.
Okay, which came out last year. So, like, that's brand new. Like, it only started last year.
And we also have CSI New York.
That's new. They didn't have that the other day because it always shows up as, like, hey, like, you have to buy this.
And no, CSI Miami.
Oh, cool.
So all of us there.
Yeah, great, cool.
and Scream is there as well, yes, as I told you.
Which is why I'll be getting Paramount Plus trial later today to watch that, because I still haven't seen it. But also, shout out to Jack Quaid for just openly tweeting spoilers now, which is great.
What Love is it. He spoiling?
He's in the movie. He's just tweeting spoilers of himself covered in blood.
In
Scream, yes.
Oh, okay. I still haven't watched it yet. Like I said, I told you what I did. I bought it the same
day. Yeah, and then you saw it. Like, yeah, and then you saw it was on. Anyways, the other thing that I've been watching is, I'll get into it real quick here. Legacies finally came back from its mid-season hiatus thanks to the Olympics, and man, it's going great. Hope has decided to be evil and gay, so yeah. And then Superman and Lois as well, which is doing some interesting things. Not bad things, but interesting. And the only other thing is I didn't know what to start, so I watched a couple episodes of Arrow, like season one, last night while I was eating dinner. So
that's good. Arrow's always a good show.
Yeah. As for what I've been playing, lots. But the three main ones, Horizon. I finished the main story, obviously, since I was asked a question about the ending and I could answer it. I finished Horizon. I'm working towards the platinum. Fuck that Machine Strike trophy, though, is all I have to say. The AI in that board game that's in there is ridiculous, even in the beginner levels.
I wasn't playing that. Like, no. It looks cool. It looks like a fun game to play, but I'm like, I don't want to get into that right now.
You only need to win against two players. However, I've won one. The next one I can do that's at beginner level, they're relentless. It doesn't matter what you do, they kick your ass.
Maybe you have to upgrade your pieces.
I have a lot of pieces of better variety as well. Like I went to a hunting ground and bought them because that's where you can get new pieces. You can also win them from beating people, but I went to a hunting ground, bought new pieces, tried to go back, still nothing. Anyways, beyond that, I've also been playing Cyberpunk, which, you know, is pretty good. The PS5 update feels great. I haven't seen how they've changed the economy yet, really. They mentioned they did that with the 1.5 update, but the city feels more alive, especially on the PS5 version. It definitely feels like you're getting into a lively city and not just like a world that's not lived in. There are some noticeable things still, like Donnie posted an image last night or a tweet about some guy who saw a guy who was getting sick for like 45 minutes in the same spot.
It be like that sometimes. Rough night of partying. Hey,
it
45
do.
Minutes in the corner.
The other thing is I've been playing Dying Light 2 as well. I finally got the grappling hook, which is nice. Changes the gameplay up a bit, which is nice. Not that the parkour is bad. Oh, Delvin, they fixed the co-op. We can actually co-op together.
Oh, they fixed it? That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
I have to get back into that game. But like I said, I'm trying to finish Horizon, did I get back into Dying Light and get into some other games? But I do want to finish Horizon first before I do that, because
So like I've mentioned, I like Dying Light; it's great. I'm having a blast with it still. The only other thing I played, but I don't feel like I played enough of it to judge it yet, is I've started the Dawn of Ragnarok expansion for Horizon. It's weird. I can turn into a bird and fly now.
Question. Because I saw a trailer for that. Is that a whole completely different game?
No, it's light spoilers for Valhalla here. And I mean the main campaign, not Dawn of Ragnarok. I haven't gotten far enough to do it. So kind of like how Odyssey and Origins each had their own elements of Isu integration in the game, where in Origins you could obtain Isu armor for Bayek. In Odyssey, like the Cyclops or the Sphinx or anything like that that you fought, they were Isu. They were people who were corrupted by Isu artifacts. And in Valhalla, the Isu integration of the game is that you go to what's called the Seer's Hut to start the Asgard and Jotunheim quest. So like you can actually travel to Asgard and Jotunheim in the main campaign of Valhalla. They have their own quests, their own world activities. Like you actually meet Thor and Odin, and stuff like that. And then, so this DLC takes place in the mythical world of Svartalfheim.
But you're still playing as, I can't remember her name.
Ivor.
You're still playing as Ivor. Okay.
Yes. now, if you don't want to play any of the main campaign of of Valhalla, you are able to buy the Dawn of Ragnarok expansion for Valhalla if you own it, and boost yourself up to the level you need to be to access Dawn of Ragnarok's content, and just jump right in.
Okay. Yeah. I have a question about Valhalla.
Yeah.
Is Valhalla, because I have Valhalla and I played it. I have it on Series X. I never finished it because everything I've read was like, oh, it's 120 hours to beat this game. Is it 120 hours, or is it more like how Far Cry is? Well, you can beat it in 20 to 30 hours, but to get the
full. So it's not 120 hours to beat the campaign, but some campaign missions are locked behind a certain power level. You can do them if you're not that power level, but you're gonna face a challenge.
Okay.
I will say, I don't have a good estimate for you, because let me tell you, I've played Valhalla for like, according to my game clock, 276 hours.
See, that's what I don't want to do. don't want to get into it and play for that long. You'd be like, all
right. But keep in mind, I tried to go for the platinum and only gave up when the fishing system was broken.
Okay.
So I think you could probably, it's not going to be 20 or 30. I think you could probably beat the main campaign for Valhalla in about 40.
Okay. That's
doable. Just mainline it. However, keeping in mind that if you're just mainlining the campaign, you are going to be wildly underleveled.
See, that's not fun. I like how Far Cry did it. Far Cry, you can kind of just, do some side missions and things like that, do a lot of the side missions, and you still can have a good experience within 20 to 30 hours of the game. I don't want to be playing that. I frankly don't have the time to be playing a game, one game for 200 hours at this point in time. Like, you know, I want to get to other things, and that's why a lot of games I just like, I don't know if I want to play that. Like, I can play something like Elden Ring, because Elden Ring is, while it has a lot of lore and stuff like that, the main thing of it is figuring out how to beat these bosses and things like that, getting through it that way.
Okay, but also, keep in mind, I've been playing Valhalla since launch, and have put 276 hours in it.
Yeah.
Valhalla came out when the PS5 launched, so
yes,
like, I've put that amount of time into it over more than a year.
That's the same problem I have with Persona 5. I have Persona 5, and I want to say I'm 60, 70 hours through the game, and I'm like not even halfway through it. As my son's, I'm like, no, you're not even halfway through the game. I'm like, oh, all right, I can't keep doing this.
Yeah, so like with Valhalla, I got Valhalla. I had it pre-ordered, and it came out 2 days before the PS5 launched, in 2020.
Yeah.
So like, I've had more time with Valhalla than anything, really, because like I've had it since my PS5, and I've just played a bunch of it, and like, I went for the platinum for a bit, and the fishing system was broken, and I was like, "Yep, nope, I'm not doing that."
And frankly speaking, it's too much stuff to be coming out now to be just focused on one game. It's way too much stuff coming out every month and things like that. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it with the state of play.
yeah, I mean, but like, I've played that. I kind of stopped Far Cry. I won't get into why. I didn't beat it. But I had fun with it while I did. I just take issue with some of the stuff that comes up in the story. So I'm not going to subject myself to that. And I do appreciate the warning you gave me about it. So,
yeah.
And then other than that, I've just played small things here and there that I don't really feel like talking about. But I'm excited for something we'll talk about later.
Okay. Well, let's get to the news. We got a couple of stories here we can talk about. The first one, which is an interesting story, if you know. Atari apparently bought Moby Games for $1.5 million.
Didn't know Atari was still buying game companies.
That's what's the interesting thing about this. Atari, this article is from Kotaku. Atari, or at least the company that's currently holding the rights to use that name, announced earlier this week that it has spent $1.5 million buying Moby Games, a website most of you probably used at one point or another in your lives, without even thinking about its monetary worth. Let me see what's on it. The site, founded in 1999, is basically a huge database for video game credits, screenshots, and platform information. It's the closest thing the industry has ever had to a central credits register. Since publishers themselves are notoriously terrible of keeping track of such things, it's also very quietly a great repository of quality screenshots for retro and pixel art games. So, Haley, what do you think about Atari purchasing something like this?
Oh, is Atari going to try and re-enter the video game consoles space?
I don't know. It would be cool to see them do that, but this seems more like something that they can, like, okay, we can use this to keep track of video game history, essentially.
It's interesting. Are they also going to use it in their new Atari hotels?
Probably. That might be a good point. That might actually be a good point. Like, if you
I don't know. Has the first one even opened yet?
I don't know. That's a good idea. But that's a good idea. Like, if you own this quote-unquote video game registry, why not put those type of facts and things up in your hotels and things like that? That makes sense now that you said that. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Now let me see. I'm going to look up if the Atari hotels open up yet.
I don't know. It's a good question, you know?
That's a very good question. But I think it's cool. Like I said, this is one of those things that I don't think a lot of people know what Moby Games are. Or even probably care. But like I said, this is one of those things you probably would use on the internet and not even realize you're using it. So I think it's really cool that Atari's still buying stuff for one thing.
Yeah. Or that they've got the money to do so.
Okay. Atari Hotel. I think it might be open already.
Nice. Vamping.
Yeah, apparently I think it's open.
Okay.
Cool. If all goes according to plan, the first hotel expected to start operations in 2022, located in Las Vegas, is being designed as a Genister, a global architecture firm. A neon-shaped Ascendant Hotel is designed like Atari's A-shaped logo. It's expected to have 500 rooms. Yeah. So sometime this year, it's going to be open.
Cool. So we don't actually know if it's open yet.
I'm seeing, like, when you Google it, it comes up like it's open. Huh. But I don't know. Like I said, it's supposed to open this year. Like, the first thing that comes up is AtariHotels.com and the shops and memberships and all that good stuff for it. Let me see if I can book a room.
Oh, my God. We're really going to try and book a hotel room on PSXP?
Yeah, why not? Well, they're not giving us a link to book it yet. So you can't.
So it's probably not open.
It says membership. Okay, so I can sign up for membership for it.
Okay, the last article I see about this was from October 21st, 2020.
Okay, I am booking. I am now signing up for membership to the Atari Hotel, which gives you limited edition drop, special room rates, invitation to exclusive events, and double rewards. So,
great. Can we do that after the show?
No, this is good. This is good television.
This is a podcast.
Exactly. So now I'm already done. It's basically just signing up for it so they can tell you when it's ready.
Ah, cool. That's all it is.
I'm already signed up for it. So
you going
now,
to Las Vegas on your vacation soon?
Of course not. But at least they can tell me, okay, when the hotel's actually going to open up.
Oh, man.
So now I'm a quote-unquote Atari club member.
And they cool. Can
tell me, they can tell me when the hotel actually opens up now.
What benefits do you get? No, don't. You've already said it.
They're probably going to give me a ColecoVision or something like that.
Oh, man.
In other interesting news, and this is wild, but this is a thing. Russia apparently is legalizing video game piracy in response to the sanctions. As we all know, because we have been living under a rock, Russia's doing some bad things. They're literally invading a country.
I think we can unequivocally say Russia is just doing war crimes. We don't have to say bad things. We can say war crimes. Invading another country unprovoked is a war crime.
I was being modest. But yes, Russia's doing some bad things. And the whole world is responding to it by kind of giving them sanctions and things like that. And instead of, you know, doing the right thing, like, I mean, we should stop doing this. They're trying to find ways to get around these sanctions.
Yeah.
And one of their ways is apparently telling their people, okay, it's legal for you now to pirate video games. This is a real thing.
It's an interesting statement. However, again, like, your country is committing war crimes, which, while we're at it, we know most of the Russian citizens did not ask for this, but
not
it's happening.
Yeah, like, not at all. Don't blame the people. Blame the government.
Blame one person. Yeah. One person.
That one person who runs the government. Yes.
Yeah.
Let me get into a little bit what it says. As reported by IGN, the Russian government is now allowing its companies to use IP from companies located in other countries without actually having to pay them. It has also been suggested that torrent sites will be unblocked to make it easier for Russian citizens to pirate content. Russian citizens will be able to pirate movies without needing to fear any kind of legal repercussions. And this would extend to all forms of entertainment as well, like video games and TV shows.
Okay.
This is another catch. However, it has been reported by PlayStation Lifestyle that a sizable portion of Russian consumers tend to pirate content anywhere. So it's unclear that this effect, what effect this will really have.
Yeah, I know. Like, a lot of people pirate anything. Like, it happens. Piracy is a thing, no matter how much you try to stop it. So, for reference, stop putting Denuvo in your games and tanking their performance. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like we don't have to be, like kind here. They're committing war crimes. I won't get into them, but, one, I have to say this, and I'm sorry people, but bombing a children's hospital is a war crime. Like, we don't need to dance around the bush there.
Yes. It's scary and tragic. Everything that's going on in the Ukraine. Best wishes and prayers to those people.
I hope they're doing well.
I hope all this stuff can get figured out by people much smarter than me.
Also, while we're at it, maybe don't tweet out the president of Ukraine's location when on a live stream call with him and we're asked specifically not to tweet out his location.
I hope somebody will do that.
Three American Republican senators did that anyways.
Jesus Christ, man.
Like, they were literally told not to tweet out that they were on a video call with him to protect Zelensky's location, and they did it anyways.
I'm moving on. I don't want to get angry. Yes.
Yeah. So I hope things end over there in Ukraine very soon, and I hope that someone takes care of the problem.
Yeah, I hope we have a solution to this situation, quote unquote, because this is nuts.
Yeah.
I never thought I would see something like this in my lifetime in terms of like the war in Iraq. I said to somebody before, the war in Iraq was different because a lot of that stuff we saw deserts. We didn't see like actual cities, fully formed cities being bombed with children hospitals and things like that. A lot of the video they showed us was like of desert lands and things that huts and things like that. It's a lot. It hits a lot different when you see a city that looks like a city that you can live in getting bombed and destroyed and tanks going down it.
I mean, if we want to be honest, though, I'm sure Iraq and Afghanistan looked like that before they started getting bombs.
So. Oh, yeah. I'm quite sure it has. But it's just that it's been going on so long in Iraq and Iran, we never really got to see that part of it.
I mean, I was born in 95. I don't think there's ever been a year I've been alive where one country, whether that's the U.S. or Canada, has ever not been at war.
Oh yeah.
So
the war in Iraq started in 92, I want to say. I was 12, I want to say that was. Well, I digress. Let's not get into the war.
Yeah, stuff. Let's not. In lighter news.
Yeah, we got a couple more stories to get to. Let me. This is a pretty cool story that I specifically pulled up for Haley. I thought she would appreciate this.
Okay.
Because I didn't know this was a thing. Apparently, there's a video game accessibility awards.
Yes. It's hosted by Steven Spahn and Alana Pierce.
That's pretty cool. And the second annual video game accessibility awards has arrived and honored games that have gone above and beyond to push forward the bar of accessibility by making their games more available to so many more. Now, let me give you some of the winners. The ability to bypass. The nominees were, that's a lot of lists here. Let me look up all these nominees. The full list of winners are here. Second channel for games that give players a second means or interface to get information they may need or progress. The winner of that was Guardians of the Galaxy. For clear text, for games that allow players to reliably read text in games or its interface. The winner of that was Halo Infinite. Input reduction. I like this so far because it's showing you stuff that people don't really think about in games that are super important to people.
Which again, not to stir the pot with the Elden Ring people, but like when we ask for accessibility, we're not asking you to make Elden Ring easier.
We're asking you
to add accessibility features, not an easy mode.
Yes.
So, like, you can make your game as challenging as you want. We're just asking for accessibility features. Now, that's not to say that easy mode is not an accessibility option. It's just not the only one.
Yes.
Like, if you want your game to be unequivocally hard, like Elden Ring or whatnot, like, cool. You don't need to add easy mode, but we are asking you to make your text readable, or, you know, delayed input be an option. Like,
and that's the next award. Input reduction for games that allow players to decrease the amount of input needed to successfully undertake a sequence of actions required by the game. And the winner was Before Your Eyes by Goodbye World Games and Skybound. These are really cool awards for people, for companies doing things to kind of make games easier. AI assistance for games that allow players to progress through challenges with assistance of an in-game AI. Forza Horizon 5 won for that. I think that's dope. Improved
Forza's precision. Accessibility options are pretty great. Not even just in like standard accessibility, but like even in their character creator, which again, the avatars for Horizon don't really look great, but you have the option to like full on have prosthetic limbs and stuff like that in character creation, which is nice.
So. That's dope. I like, we'll go on IGN and look up all the rest of the awards, but I like that all these awards given to these companies are great because they're making games easier and more accessible to people to buy and play them. And they're not necessarily making the games easier, quote unquote, baby mode and stuff like that. No, they're making them more accessible to people. And there is a vast difference.
To quote Andrea Renee, baby ass baby mode.
Exactly. There's a vast difference between making a game easy and making a game accessible. I think people
lose the
argument with that because people always say, oh, we can't make the game easier for people. No, you have to make it accessible.
Again, easy mode is a form of an accessibility option, but it's not the only one.
Yes.
People too easily conflate the two. Like, as soon as Sifu announced they were adding not only an easy mode, but also a harder mode, people got mad and said they should only be adding the harder mode. And I was like, well, I mean, if you read reviews, Sifu doesn't really have accessibility options in any which way. So adding the easy mode is their accessibility options. And also, that news was tweeted out by Steve Saylor. So, like, you know, they were actually consulting disabled, like, players, like, for accessibility reasons. Like, for those who don't know, Steve Saylor is legally blind.
Yeah. My thing is this, and my thing has always been this, and it's not to sound crass or anything like that, but why would you care if somebody gets more access to a game?
Yeah, that's always my thing whenever someone's like, I don't want an easy mode in, this is a generalization, but the one I most commonly say is, I don't want an easy mode in Dark Souls. It wouldn't feel right. I'm like, how? You could still play the game the normal way.
You don't
way.
Have to play
like,
the easy mode.
Yeah.
You don't have to use any of the accessibility options. Those are for people who need them. They're not for you.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
And while we're at it, keep in mind, you may be perfectly fine now, but tomorrow you could become disabled and need accessibility options. The human body is like, to put it nicely, a bag of meat that like decides one day, I don't want to work properly. You could become disabled tomorrow through no fault of your own. And guess what? Then you might need accessibility options, and that's why we advocate for them.
It's funny you should mention that because my dad was a huge Tetris fan. Like, he played it a lot, like, every day. He actually beat Tetris, which is a wild thing to say. He, like, I think it's like 500 levels, something like that. He sat down one day and played all the levels of Tetris and just beat it on, like, Game Boy. That was his thing. And he played like little games like that, but as he got older, not to say he's blind or anything like that, but his vision got bad and his reflexes got bad, and he had to stop gaming altogether. Now, if these accessibility options were there when he was playing games, and that wasn't that long ago, by the way, you know, but if they were there when he was playing games, he probably would be still buying and purchasing video games to this day, especially now he's retired and stuff like that. He'd probably be playing video games to this day, but he can't because essentially it time caught up with him and he can't, his reflex is not the same, his vision is not the same, and it literally affects him to play video games. So anything, I'm glad that they're doing this, because if it ever gets to that point where I can't play video games the way I want to, I would like for companies to have accessibility options there so I can go out there and play video games for the rest of my life if I choose to.
Yeah.
It's dope that they're doing this. I'm glad that they're recognizing with award shows. That's great. I would like to see more of this type of stuff. Maybe add it in the Game Awards. Have Game Awards have some awards like this, like certain categories, like stuff like this. Because this is important. This is very important for a lot of people. It may not affect me or you at the moment in time, but it affects a lot of people in this country and around the world. So the more ways that we can get these people playing games and buying games, because I'm quite sure video game developers want these people buying games, the better it is for everybody. Because we're always complaining about how, oh, games are getting cost, are costing too much. You know how you bring down cost of video games? Get more people buying them.
Yeah.
You know how you do that? Make it more accessible to everybody. Simple as that.
Yeah. Easy. Accessibility is a great thing. It's a great thing to advocate for. I've mentioned them several times before, but there's several accessibility advocates I think you should go follow. Go follow Steven Spahn, Steve Saylor, Laura Kate Dale. There's plenty of them out there. And they're all advocating for great things. So,
yeah, and on one of the Delvin Cox Experience episodes, I had a guy on named Tyler, and he's disabled. And he was talking about how these accessibility options helped him be able to still game. And that's great. He's a big time gamer. I think he did mention Steve Saylor helping him get the Xbox controller.
Yeah, the Xbox. I forget that it's the Xbox like accessibility controller, but I forget like the actual
name for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Steve mentioned it in one of his latest TikToks, but like I forget the name, like the specific name for the controller, but like it's their controller that's made to be like accessible, which is really cool. So
yeah, and I appreciate that. The guy who's on my podcast name's Tyler Anson, and I appreciate that. Because of these accessibility options, he's able to play video games and have conversations about video games that he loves because companies are looking out for him. And that's awesome. Dope. Yeah. So the next topic, do we have any more story? I think we have one more story.
Yes, we do. Before we move into our big main topic.
I will let you get with this next story because this is right into your bag of things.
It is right into my bag of things. Also, this is the game I'm very excited to have releasing soon. So earlier this week, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands revealed what their end game was going to be because, as most people know, Borderlands 3's end game wasn't very exciting. So it was nice to see what the end game for the D&D-themed Borderlands game coming up is going to be, which is called an end game dungeon called Chaos Chamber that is infinitely repeatable, and essentially allows players to teleport into a random dungeon with an assortment of unique treasures, dangerous laboratories, and difficulty tweaking features. So like, you can, you and your squad will fight across 3 dungeon rooms, take on a mini boss, navigate another 3 arenas, and challenge the big bad in the final area. Portals await you at the end of most rooms, giving the team weighted choices that define their Chaos Chamber playthrough. Once you've cleared an entire dungeon, a chest filled with unique loot is yours for the taking. Moon orbs, a form of currency that helps upgrade weapons, can also be found. Additional factors include crystals. Players collect and utilize crystals to earn more rewards. Players amass crystals by smashing a crystalline rainbow glowing die that spawns after completing a room and by completing optional side objectives that are randomly assigned to each room. So, same as a regular Borderlands game. Blessings. After collecting enough crystals to activate an altar, players receive blessings ranging from increased critical damage or ammo capacity to melee attack and movement speed buffs and more. The polar opposite, however, are also curses. Curses are debuffs that last the rest of the run and can make it that much harder for players to survive. But with higher risk comes higher rewards. So it's very nice to see that they've openly like detailed what their end game is going to be, which is nice because like I enjoyed Borderlands 3. Like most people know, I platinumed it. However, really their only end game activity were the like survival horde mode things that just weren't fun because they were ridiculously hard no matter how many players you had. Like they were nigh impossible to do single player. And then as most Borderlands fans know, the more people you have playing, the more the game gets difficult. Like, it increases scaling of enemy difficulty based on how many people are playing in the world. So, like, as you increased it, yeah, it got easier because you had four players, but enemy health and things like that, they got tougher. So you had to, like, find ways to essentially cheese them. But yeah, it's just nice to see their end game detailed. They also yesterday, I think, detailed what their season pass will be, which is nice. So
this is all French to me because I haven't played any of these Tiny Tina games. I know they gave one for free on PlayStation Plus a couple weeks ago, so I'm gonna try that one.
It's not good. It's not that it's not good. It's fantastic. The problem is. I want to reiterate to people, the one they gave to people on PS Plus last month is DLC that was originally part of Borderlands 2. The reason I'm saying not to go and play Tiny Tina's one-shot expansion is because you're going back to game design from 2012. You can't jump over obstacles. You can't, like, fall. Like, there's a bunch of things that if you played Borderlands 3, going back to Tiny Tina's D&D expansion, like DLC from Borderlands 2, you're going to feel sluggish and it's going to daunt your experience.
Okay.
Like, that's why I'm saying not to go play it. It's a fantastic DLC. Like, if you want to see it, I would recommend watching a playthrough on YouTube. Like, it's very good. It was absolutely my favorite DLC for Borderlands 2. Just like the zombies expansion for Borderlands 1 was my favorite as well in that regard, but like the D&D DLC for Borderlands 2 was fantastic. However, people are assuming that this Tiny Tina's one shot is related to the new game when it's just the DLC from Borderlands 2 pulled out and sold separately to get people excited. But the problem is they didn't change any of the mechanics. There's still Borderlands 2 mechanics, so you can't vault over objects, you can't jump on things. Like, stuff that was improved in Borderlands 3 is not present here, so it could daunt your experience.
So you're saying just go out and just try the new one first?
Well, here's the thing. If you're not sure if you're going to enjoy Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, Borderlands 3 is constantly on sale. Now, there are some changes to the gameplay in Wonderlands, like the fact that in Wonderlands you don't have a set character, you create your own character in Wonderlands, which is interesting and a new feature for Borderlands. However, most of the gunplay and stuff like that will probably be the same, and being able to vault and jump and stuff like that. So if you are unsure whether or not you would enjoy Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, but you want to try, Borderlands 3 is constantly on sale. In fact, I think it's on sale right now. I would recommend jumping in and trying that. And if you enjoy it and want to have a more D&D fantasy themed Borderlands experience, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands is out March 25th.
There you go. That's some good advice. Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Now, our next topic I brought up because you didn't have a chance to talk about it. So I think it's important that you get a chance to talk about the recent state of play that just transpired this past week and your thoughts on it. There was a lot of stuff announced. I'll give you a list of certain things we can go over.
Oh, I mean, I watched it last night. I know everything that was announced. But for our listeners, yes, absolutely, yes. Give them a list.
We have Exo Primo comes out in 2023. You have a new Ghostwire Tokyo trailer. The demo for Final Fantasy Origins was released. What is it called? New Stranger of Paradise?
That was released. So the game that you're referring to is Strangers of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin.
Yes, that demo was out there. So if you want to check that out, check that out. Forspoken got delayed, and they showed a cool trailer for it. Gundam Evolution, a free-to-play FPS fighting action game. Set in the
Gundam universe that looked like it's a PS3 game.
Exactly. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Cowabunga Collection is coming out this year. Gildabash, multiplayer Monsters Mayhem, coming to PS4 this year and PS5. JoJo Bizarre Adventures All-Star Battle R launches this fall. Trek to Numi is coming out this
year. Trek to Yomi.
Yomi. Okay, Numi. Whatever. Trek to Yomi is coming out this year. Returnal Ascension, updates for the co-op and a tile of, I don't know how to say that word, so I'm not going to even say it.
So essentially, like, it's the, for anyone who's played Devil May Cry, it's the tower mode. So, like, you're ascending a tower, like, it's a horde mode of increasing difficulty as you complete each room.
Exactly. The Dio Field Chronicle is announced for PS4 and PS5, and Valkyrie Elysium is come out in 2022. So with just me saying those names, Haley, what did you think of the state of play that we got this past week?
I mean, it was a state of play. And they, like, again, PlayStation always does their best to, like, quell expectations and be like, hey, here's what the state of play is about. There won't be any software. Like, I saw, like, a bunch of people before the event speculating that this is where we'd get a Spartacus reveal or stuff like that. But PlayStation in the announcement literally was like, you will not see hardware or software reveals for PlayStation, like, studio stuff, mostly here, except for Returnal. They were right.
I didn't expect none of that, by the way. I know
but I'm just
thinking that, but I didn't have any idea. I didn't think they were going to do that at all. I don't know where they got that from.
So I'm going to slot in part of Coach Smith's question here while we're at it. Because they asked about, so they have a part of, a question here.
Go ahead, slot it in. This is the time for it.
I'm going to. They have part of a question here. We'll ask the rest later. But the part of the question that they asked about the state of play is, why does it seem the Twitterverse was upset with Sony's state of play on Thursday? I thought it was good for what it was, and it got me excited about some games. And you're right. For most people who knew to temper their expectations because they actually listened to what PlayStation stated, State of Play was fine. It was exactly what they said it was going to be. But then you've got people out here expecting trailers for, like, Hogwarts Legacy and Gotham Knights or the rumored Sly Cooper game or Infamous or stuff like that. And it's like they specifically said Japanese developers and some worldwide partners, but it was a 20-minute state of play. And yes, we got more games than I expected out of it, but they literally always, when they announce a state of play, try to temper people's expectations. And yes, still, you just get speculation that goes wild. And then people get upset that the speculation is not what was shown.
My whole thing with state of plays is always is I don't look at the speculation. I don't look at the rumors and things like that because I don't want to get my hopes up too high. And I know the rumors a lot of times are BS. I only look at the state of play and see what they announced and what they're going forth with. And that's what I base my opinions off state of play off of. My opinion on this one was it's kind of lackluster because there was nothing there for me personally that I would like. No, except the stuff they've already announced, like Forspoken and what is it? Yomi, I think it's called.
Yeah, I'm excited for Shrek Diomi. It looks great. Strangers of Paradise continues to look batshit insane, and
it looks terrible to me. I'm scared. I like Final Fantasy. I don't know if it's going to be good. I'm going to get it and try it, but ugh.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I bet big on this game in PSVG's Fantasy Critic League. I have this game on my team, so I'm hoping it scores well, but the game has become something of a meme. I mean, there's literally, like, chaos as a GIF all over the place. Also, Imran Khan posted a scene last night that has been circulating for a few days, but, like, he retweeted it or essentially was like, they've got orbs. They're showing each other their balls. And he's not talking about what you think he's talking about. The clip literally has them all pulling out glowing rocks and putting them beside each other. Like,
yeah.
The story for this game is probably wild, but you know what? The combat looks fun, and I'm sure I'll pick it up at some point. So
yeah. But
other than that, I wasn't really interested in anything else in the state of play. Returnal's great, but I'm not looking to play Returnal co-op. So
I don't want
to
die with my friends. That's cool. I'm cool on that. But the thing I got excited about with the Cowabunga Collection, I'm super excited about that because I love the Ninja Turtles. I love the games. And I know you can play these in ROMs and things like that, but I don't want to play them in ROMs right now. I want to kind of be able to just turn on my console and play them is what I kind of want to do. And all these games, I remember, like Tournament Fighter, people think these are all just side-scrolling beat-em-ups. That's not actually true. Tournament Fighter is a fighting game. The Ninja Turtle games for NES that I think they have on here, they were like very hard for one thing. They are known for their difficulty. And they are like, they're side-scrolling games, but they have like puzzle elements to them. They have like swimming elements. They're very difficult games. These games have a lot of variety to them. Just going based off of the name, like the Cowabunga Collection, no, there's a lot of stuff in here that you can play and you can enjoy. And it has the arcade versions of the Ninja Turtle game, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It has, let me see if I can get the whole list of the games up real quick. You don't have to map. I got it up right now. It has the Game Boy games, which is also cool. It's so much content here. And it's awesome. I'm just super happy for it about it. And it's crazy because my son, we were just happened to be talking about this a couple weeks ago with my son. Didn't know this was coming out. He went, my mom took him and my daughter to like this, what do you call those things? Those little parks you go to that have like, you can, like zip line parks or whatever you call those things. You just jump on the trampoline park. Let's just call it that.
Okay.
Took them to a trampoline park. And they had an arcade there. And he said in the arcade, they had a Ninja Turtle arcade cabinet. But it's a new one based off of the 2012 series, which I've never played. I didn't know they even had a game for that. He's like, hey, Dad, they have a new Ninja Turtles game at this trampoline park based off the 2012 series. That's a lot like Turtles in Time, but they just kind of reskinned it and remade it off the 2012. I'm like, that's pretty awesome. So
when you say 2012, are we talking the movies?
No. For those who don't know, which you should know, this is the best version of Ninja Turtles, by the way. Ninja Turtles had a 2012 series on Nickelodeon. That's kind of like CGI. That's incredible. It was on Nick for a few years, and it's a little bit more darker than any other version of Ninja Turtles. Like, people die in the show and things like that. It's really, really good. And they apparently made a game based off of it. And the game's really good as well, apparently, for what my son says. But yeah, if you haven't watched it, check out the 2012 Ninja Turtles series. It's super good. It's super dark. It's good for kids. It's good for adults. Like I said, characters actually die in the show and don't come back. Highly recommend it.
Makes sense. I don't know what else to say about the state of play. Like, it was exactly what they ordered.
Did you like it overall?
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah, like, I never get too excited for them because they always are like, hey, we're tempering your expectations. Now, I'll get excited for a showcase.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, this is cool, but, you know, it's nothing, like, with the exception of a few games that we haven't seen yet. Like, I was already excited for Ghostwire Tokyo. So I didn't need to see any more of that.
I'm not. That game does not look good.
It looks so weird. I'm so interested in it. It looks so weird and so unique. I'm hoping it's good.
I know Greg's been tweeting about it subtly. He literally was tweeting angrily the other day about a game not letting you listen to audio logs while in gameplay and having to sit on a menu. And it's just like, don't do that. And I wholeheartedly agree. Like, if your game has audio logs, let me listen to them while doing gameplay. Like, don't make me sit on a screen. I'm looking at you, BioShock.
Yes, I agree. But yeah, Ghostwire Tokyo still looks cool to me. Final Fantasy, Stranger in Paradise, or whatever you want to call that crap, looks weird. Forspoken looks amazing. I'm super excited about that one.
This is the first trailer for Forspoken that looked interesting, but the other ones,
I thought they all looked interesting personally, but I'm super excited for Forspoken. I wish it was coming out in May when it was originally supposed to come out, but I'll wait for it.
So my favorite thing about this is, like, and people know I'm excited for it, but Gotham Knights got a release date the other day. Finally. Oh, yeah,
we can talk about that. It's in October, right?
Yeah, it's like October 25th. Everything is coming out in the final 3 months again. Why do we do this? Like, put your games out in different spots throughout the year. Why are we doing this all the time? Like, after this month ends, like, we have GTA re-release on Tuesday, which, by the way, anybody who doesn't know, GTA is, like, having a sale for the first 3 months for the next-gen version. So even if you don't actually want to play it, but you want to have it,
$10.
$10 or $12.50 in Canada, but still not bad. For the first 3 months. Afterwards, it goes up to $40 US and $50 Canadian. For the new version. Just buy it, even if you're not going to play it. You're going to save yourself money when you inevitably want to replay it, because literally everybody I know wants to replay GTA at some point. So
it's literally cheaper than buying the PS3 version in stores now. Everybody knows I have a PS3, and I saw it in stores yesterday, and the PS3 version in stores is $20.
Yeah.
So buy it.
It's good until like June 15th is when that sale ends. But like, we've got GTA this week, Strangers of Paradise this week coming up. Next week, we've got Ghostwire, Kirby, and Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. But then after that, there's nothing like a big or announced for release until August with Saints Row. Like, that's come on, announce, like, release your game.
Oh, and I was 100% right about the Arkham Knight Suicide Squad game. I knew good and well they weren't coming out around the same time.
Oh, absolutely not.
Everybody kept telling me that. Why they can't come out at the same time? Because they're a different game. Like, no, they're not coming out around the same time. There's no way in hell they're coming out the same year, I said.
Exactly. Also, Schreier also tweeted this, like, earlier this year that, like, even though WB hasn't confirmed it, here's your confirmation. If Gotham Knights is coming out in October, Suicide Squad is not coming out this year.
Yeah, I think I heard it's coming out in 2023, if I'm correct. Somebody
said that's what Schreier reported, that it had internally been delayed till 2023, but WB and Rocksteady have not come out and officially said anything yet.
Yeah, I said that when they first were like, oh, they're coming out. I think they said spring this year, both of them were supposed to come out. Like, it's no way in hell both of them would come out this year. And it's around the same time.
Yeah. Like, but then again, this still feeds into the problem. Like, everything releases in like September to December. Why? Like, you have so many months of the year. Like, release your games in different spots. Now, I know COVID's hampered production and stuff like that. And there's a rumor that God of War will come out in June, which that'd be nice.
That'd be cool.
But again, here's the reason why I bring these release dates up, because unlike most state of plays, this one ended with a very special message. We'll see you soon. Which is not how they usually end, which means we're probably getting another PlayStation event at some point soon.
I would expect so. I would think in April.
Maybe. Because they tend to like to avoid the June spot and stuff like that. So, and if they're going to market God of War for June release, if that's actually true, you'd have to come out with an event, whether it's just focused on God of War or like a big showcase event soon, and start marketing it, right? But like, I don't know, the event was mostly fine, and I'm excited for a couple of the games out of it, but yeah.
Okay. Anything else we got to talk about with the state of play before we get into these questions? Because we got a good amount of questions here.
We do, which is nice considering it was like a last minute thing that we were recording today.
Yes, and these are some really good questions, so I'm ready to get to them. You ready, Haley?
I am. Okay. Heads up, you are reading the last one from Earth to Adam. I will not read that one out loud. You can do that.
I got it.
The rest of them I will ask. Okay. So Tim Pollen asks, I've been rewatching the Resident Evil movies. I love them, but they aren't exactly Oscar quality. What's your top five worst video game movies? So right out the gate, before I even start, Pixels.
That's a good answer. I'm assuming we're going with video game movies that we saw.
Yes. Yeah.
We're not Pixels. Going with like the typical, hey, this is what everybody says the worst video game movies.
Yeah, no. I'm going with like movies that I've seen. Pixels. That movie is awful. Also, I don't know how many times I have to say this, but Josh Gad's character fucks Qbert in that movie. Like, why?
So that's one for you. Yeah, I'll let you give me a five first.
Then this is going to make some people mad, but the original Mortal Kombat movies, not good.
So you're saying both of them?
Yes.
So that's 2 and 3? Okay. Yeah. I'll let you slide with those. I don't agree with that. One of them is terrible, but not. I don't think the first one is.
And this is cheating. This only counts as one entry. I also agree with Tim Paul, and I love the Resident Evil movies with Mila Jovovich in them. Okay. But they're not good.
Okay.
they're not good. And then number five, personally, I would have to go with... See, now I've like screwed myself because there's not many of them out there. Really.
Oh, there are a lot. And I have a list.
I don't have a fifth answer. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm going to give you my five. Maybe my five will help you come up with a fifth answer. They're not in any particular order, but the first one I'm going to go to.
Yeah, mine weren't either, but.
Off rip. The first one I'm going to, 100% Mortal Kombat 2 Annihilation. That movie is terrible. And everything that was about the first Mortal Kombat movie that was campy and fun, and all the characters that made the first one campy and fun, they completely stripped away and made this movie terrible. So that's the first one on my list. The second on my list, it's a video game. This is wild. It's a video game based off a comic series that turned into a movie. Is Injustice. The Injustice movie is god awful. It is super bad.
Hot take. And actually, it's not a hot take. People know this. I've never been a fan. Like, I love the gameplay of Injustice, but I've never been a fan of the fucking story. Stop trying to turn Superman into what he's not. He's not a tyrant.
I enjoyed the story because the story wasn't our Superman. It was a different Superman, essentially.
But again, it's the thing. Like, fucking Frank Miller came out with The Dark Knight Returns with Batman and Superman fighting and Superman becoming a tyrant and all this other shit. And then it had to be this thing where DC's like, oh, cool, we got to make Superman a tyrant. No, you don't. That's the complete antithesis to the character.
I think people do that because of the whole narrative that Superman's this Boy Scout who can't be corrupted and things like that. And people get tired of that. And it's a bad stereotype on Superman, but I understand why people are like, all right, we got to show Superman in some different type of ways. I get that part. But Injustice movie, don't see it. It is absolute garbage. It is terrible.
The only good thing about that movie is Justin Hartley's performance as Superman.
Yeah, I will say that. I agree with that. Okay, my third one.
Which is interesting because he also played Green Arrow on Smallville.
Yes. My third one will be a little bit more difficult because there are a lot of movies that are just terrible. I will say the Super Mario Brothers movie. That is not good. And I don't think you can redeem that.
I don't think
movie.
I've ever seen that movie in full. I've seen clips of it, but never the actual whole movie.
It's not a good movie. It's really bad. It's fun and it's campy, but it's not good in any sort of way. Like, now let's see. The fourth one that I've seen, so this is getting hard because there are a lot of movies that are just, because there are a lot of video, people don't realize this. There are a shit ton of video game movies. Like, there are like several Blood Rain movies that are awful. There are video game movies on a franchises you don't know about. And it's just one of those things where it's too many of the names that are just bad. So I go, you know what I do? My fourth one, Warcraft. I don't think it's bad. I think Warcraft movie is just boring.
I haven't seen it, so.
I own it. It's not a bad movie per se. It's a well, it looks good. It's just boring as hell. And I think that's the problem with that movie. And my fifth one, this is where it gets hard. Because like I said, there's a lot of bad video game movies. And there's some movies that are bad, but they're so bad, they're good. Like, I'll give you an example, Street Fighter, the movie. It's terrible, but it is awesome.
I mean, that's
the right reason.
That's my thing with the Resident Evil movies. And keeping in mind, I haven't seen the new one with Robbie Amell.
That was not good either.
Tom Hoover. But, like, the Mila Jovovich ones, they're not good. I just like them.
They're fun.
They're so bad, they're good.
Yes. And that's how I look about the Street Fighter movie. The Street Fighter movies are so bad, they're good because Van Damme's ridiculous acting and the wild things he says. And then he got the memorable line that M. Bison says, Ryu Julia, who's great in the movie. He says, the day M. Bison came to your town was the most important moment of your life. But to me, that was Tuesday. That is a wild line to tell somebody after you murdered their father. But yeah, So I wouldn't put the Street Fighter movies on this. Know what I would do? Monster Hunter. That one was not good. That one was really bad.
There you go. There's number five. That movie is like straight up bad. I will not watch it ever again.
Yes, and it's not bad in a Mortal Kombat, oh, this is so bad, it's good way. It's bad in like a so bad, it's terrible way. Like there's T.I.'s in the movie. Why is T.I. just randomly in this movie?
I don't know. Why are tanks in the Monster Hunter universe?
It's so bad. It makes no sense. It's not a good movie.
No.
Good question, Tim.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on to question number two from Mr. Pastor Lucas Sam Swisher. So Hollywood Bones and I played Elden Ring together for like 2 hours and it was fine. For him, it was the second time trying at it, and he wanted to be done at the exact same place where he originally had given up. I thought it was fine and such, but honestly, I don't yet get how it is one of the highest rated games of all time. What games do you not get the hype for? I think people know my answer is just going to straight up be Breath of the Wild. Like, I don't understand.
People know my answer too, because it's also Breath of the Wild. I don't understand the hype for it. I understand people love Zelda, but that's not my type of Zelda game. I'm happy that people like it a lot.
Yeah.
My son keeps telling me I should play it again. I should get back into it. And one day I'll get back into it. But I do not understand the people who say that's one of the greatest games of all time. I just don't see it. I don't like the appeal of having to go refix weapons every time it breaks and having to cook food to survive. I don't want to do that in a Zelda game per se.
Yeah. So like I don't have a problem with weapon degradation mechanics in games if they're done well. Like people know I love Fallout. Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas weapon degradation thing was great because you could usually repair your weapon with another form of the same weapon. And it was great. You'd find those weapons all the time and it would make repairing your weapon great. And, you know, like I'm fine with those mechanics. I'm also fine with having to cook food in a game to survive. But like, I just don't understand the appeal to like a Zelda game without proper dungeons and stuff like that. Like I don't understand. Beyond Breath of the Wild, I don't really know a game that's like been quoted as greatest of all time that I've not been interested in.
You know what? I have another one, so I can be different from you. The Witness.
It's a puzzle game.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that one at all. People were talking about how it was amazing, how it was one of the greatest things when it came out. Nobody talks about it now, but that was one of those games like, I don't get the appeal of this at all.
I never played it. I own it. I just never played it.
I played it.
I think I got it from PS Plus.
I did too. I played it. I'm like, I don't get the appeal of this at all. And people were like, oh, you have to go, you have to use your paper, like an actual piece of paper to figure out some of these puzzles. And things like, I'm not doing that. This is too much goddamn work. I'm like, nah, I don't want to think this hard to play a video game. I enjoy that people enjoy that game, but that game just wasn't for me. But yeah, that's my choice.
Yeah. So I mean, like, people like what they like. Like, the reason Elden Ring is so high rated is because most of the people that reviewed it are Souls fans, which is fine. But like,
I'm fine with that, by the way.
Yeah, and so am I. Like, people like what they like. Like, I wouldn't call it greatest of all time. Granted, I've not played it, so maybe my opinion would change after I played it. Like, I'm not opposed to playing Souls games. I'm not very good at them, so I'm not going to buy them at full price. Because if I get angry and don't want to play anymore, I don't want to have spent full price on it. Which is not to say that they don't deserve full price for the game. Just that, like, since I buy everything digital, I don't really get refunds. So I'd rather not spend $70 and not be able to
get your full experience out of it. I think it's very important.
Now, next question. So we've asked part of this, but Coach Smith 1993 asks, not sure if it's done yet, but what are your thoughts on Cyberpunk with the new upgrade? Also, does the multiplayer make you want to get into Returnal or get back into it? And why? And that's the rest of the thing, because we've read the rest. So in regards to Cyberpunk, I think the new update's great, especially because it's a new SKU on PlayStation. So like, it's not just running like through back compatibility mode. Like, granted, yeah, trophies don't carry over. They're looking into fixing that, but at the moment they don't carry over. So I started a new playthrough. So I don't have a lot of skills or anything yet, but the game feels great. The haptic feedback is real nice. The skill reworks for some of them are nice for the skills that I do have. The knife throwing ability actually working the way it's supposed to now is nice. And then, yeah, like it just feels like a more lively city and it's great. I don't know if Delvin's jumped back in at all because I know he beat it on Xbox Series X.
I have not yet, but I plan on doing it eventually because I'm excited seeing everybody talk about something. Because, you know, when I played it a few years ago, I loved it, even though it was broken as heck.
So did I.
So it's cool to see everybody loving it now, like I, as much as I loved it back then. Makes me want to kind of get back into it and see how they fix the things that I had problems with, like the city feeling kind of vapid and just empty at times and weird things happening. But yeah, I'm super excited to check that stuff out. I'm happy that people are enjoying Cyberpunk. That's awesome.
Now, as to the second part of your question in Returnal, no.
Not at all. It's not that I don't like it. I got to get back in Returnal to play the single player. Yes, I have to do that, but I have no interest in playing multiplayer on most games. And I think I said I'm going to play some video games that a few people were like, what was it? We were talking about some game, and I said the only way I'll get to play this game is Haley bullies me into playing it, if Delvin bullies me into playing it, or now Dev bullies me into playing it multiplayer.
I'm pretty sure you were talking about Dying Light 2, which I didn't bully you, but you like we wanted to try it for to have a conversation about it here on the show, and then we just couldn't get it to
Haley,
work.
Haley bullied me into playing it. Don't believe anything she's saying.
Okay. They fixed it now, and we can actually try again, apparently. They've fixed that, so that'd be nice to do co-op with you. Anyways, for Returnal, no, it's just like I enjoyed what I played in Returnal. I paid money for it. It was great. It just got to a point that I can't push forward in it. And you know what? That's fine. Like, I don't need to see the end.
I do. I will get back to it soon enough. But I want to get into it. I want to get into it when I can have time to get its systems down pat and enjoy the game. I don't want to get too frustrated with it. I want to be able to sit down and play it and be like, okay, I'm getting better. I want to sit down and play it and be like, okay, I'm done with this right now. Let me go play Horizon. I don't want that to be an option for me. And as long as I have those options in front of me, I'm not going to get to it. So I want to get to that point where I can be like, you know what? Let me just sit down and play nothing but Returnal, like I'm doing with Horizon right now. Okay, what's our next question?
Our next question is from at Fight on Twist, asks best PS indie games for people who don't do RPGs. So my question is, what do you consider an indie game?
I was going to ask the opposite. What do you consider an RPG? Because there's a couple of PlayStation games, but not PlayStation exclusive game. There are a couple of games that are really good, but I don't know if you consider them an RPG or not. Like it's a couple. Shoot. I'm trying to think of some of these indie games off the top of my head that I like a lot.
So, it's a question because indie to one person may not be indie to another. Like, and also RPG is kind of like a diluted genre now because like most games feature RPG mechanics. So, I don't know. Are you into like adventure games? Are you into like point and click? Are you into text based adventures?
Would Sifu be considered an independent game? An indie?
Yeah.
So Sifu would fit in that equation. I would say Sifu would probably be one of them. Trying to think of some more games.
I don't know. Like Read Only Memories 2064 might be good.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know. Is that considered an RPG or not?
No, it's not. It's it's like a text-based, memory-based adventure.
Okay. There's a few of them. There's so many good indie games.
I mean, not even just, like, this is not an advertisement. We're not being paid by PlayStation. But, like, if you're into indie games, the PlayStation Store is having a huge sale on indies right now.
Yes.
So, like, there's so many out there. I haven't played a lot of them. Like I own a lot of them through PS Plus or through having purchased them, but like I haven't had time to play a lot of them. Just because I try to keep up with the AAA zeitgeist.
I'm looking up indie games right now to give you an idea of some type of games that I think are good. Indivisible was a good game. Have you played that one?
I own it, but I have not played it.
That's a pretty good one. There's just so many good indie games out there. Ghost Runner, I think they consider that an indie game. That's it's a first-person action game that you have to kind of, like, you're a ninja, but you can't take no damage, so you have to kind of clear a room.
Yeah.
How would you describe that game?
What? Which one? Sorry.
Ghost Runner.
So I played it. It's hard, but, like,
very hard.
I kind of describe it the same way I describe Super Hot. It's like, you're going to die. You're going to get frustrated. But once you beat a level, it feels great.
Yeah. Hotline Miami, of course, is another great indie game.
Same kind of feel. Hotline Miami 2 as well. Also has the same feel. Where, like, you die in, like, one hit, but beating a level feels great. I don't know. I'm just...
There's a game, I found one. It's called NSR, No Straight Roads. It's a really cool indie game where you're like, it's like this action-adventure game where that has a mix of rhythm-based, like, combat, where you're these two playable characters. You have to use music to defeat the bad guys and stuff. It's a really cool game. I definitely check. Google that one and see if you like that one. That's a good one I would recommend highly. That's an indie game.
Yeah. Like, there's a bunch out there. Far more than we can recommend. I'd recommend definitely checking out the indie sale.
Yes, definitely do that.
Yeah. Our next question comes from Taco Shirt K asks, why is Horizon 2 so damn big? Don't they realize some of us have jobs and girls and shit? It took me a whole day to get to the Forbidden West. I mean, it's an action RPG. I don't know what you expected. Like, of course it's big.
That is a good question. I've often said that that's my problem with a lot of video games now, that they make them so expansive that people who want to get through everything can't possibly get through everything. And I like big games, but some of this stuff you got to just scale down. Like, Assassin's Creed is just ridiculous.
But it's not even that it's big. Like, if you mainline Horizon, which is doable, you can beat the main campaign in like 20 hours.
Yeah, that's true. Horizon is, out of these offenses, Horizon may be the least. But still, I think his problem probably is that the side quests are so engrossing.
Yeah.
It makes you want to play them. So you got to get lost in the world.
And also, like, the side quests in Forbidden West not only are better in general, but they have better rewards than they did in Zero Dawn. Like, in Zero Dawn, you just get shards for completing a mission. But, like, there's a side quest you can do in the Dawn, which is, like, the starting area after you've done a couple of, like, enclosed specific areas for story missions and then move to, like, the actual open world. There's a side quest you can do in the Dawn that literally gives you a weapon that has become one of my favorite new archetypes. And they showed it in the trailer. It's that propelled spike thrower. Love that thing.
Yeah, it's so much stuff.
Yeah.
These side quests give you. It makes you want to do it. And if you're somebody who just wants to get through a game, that can be daunting. That can be like a task. Yeah, so I understand what he's saying by that.
For sure. But why is it so big? I mean, I don't know. It's probably the same size map as Ghost of Tsushima when you compare them.
It feels bigger. I don't know if it is bigger, but it feels bigger.
I think it's the same size. Just the reason why it may feel bigger is the Horizons map goes lengthwise, whereas Tsushima's goes vertical.
Okay, I got you.
So, like, Horizons map, when you look at it, is left to right, whereas Tsushima's map is up and down.
Gotcha.
Except for Iki Island, where Iki Island, the expansion content, does left to right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't finished Iki Island yet. I need to get back to that one. Definitely. Yeah. So, our final question from my friend Earth to Adam asks, first time, long time Pimp Juice. Yes, that's a nickname people have given me. Based off the Nelly song, if you don't know. I have recently given up my Apex Legends addiction. but now I'm stuck in Elden Ring. Although infinitely more difficult, I am somehow happier. I understand that. Has microtransactions, bad teammates, and cheaters ruined the first-person shooter genre? And he asked, when are we potting? Adam, whatever you want to pot, we can pot, brother. So, Haley, do you think microtransactions, bad teammates, and cheating has ruined first-person shooters?
I mean, it depends on what kind of first-person shooter you're playing. So, have microtransactions ruined the FPS genre? At first glance, I'd say no. Has it maybe ruined Call of Duty because your microtransactions can actually buy weapons? Yeah. It's
affecting other games. You can say that.
I mean,
I don't think to the degree was ruining them, but yeah.
But like that, the thing in most of the FPS games I played that have microtransactions, they're all cosmetic. They're not like actually affecting the player to player experience. Now, that's not to say other things aren't ruining them, like cheaters. Like every game now is like every FPS, like competitive or just like multiplayer versus type game is dealing with cheaters. Apex is dealing with them. Call of Duty is dealing with them. Fortnite's dealing with them. Like every, and Fortnite's not an FPS, obviously it's third person, but still like they're dealing with cheaters. All those like big popular multiplayer games are dealing with cheaters, and you're gonna get that regardless, because for some people, ruining the experience of others is how they have their fun. Those people are assholes, but that's how they have their fun. The microtransactions themselves are only a small part of the problem, but in most of the games that I played, they're not a problem because you can completely ignore them. Now, we can get into the philosophical debate about microtransactions another time, about how they're meant to prey on people. But anyways, if they're only for cosmetic items, I don't see them as having ruined the game, because they're there, but they're not affecting gameplay, except for Call of Duty, where you can actually buy weapons with them.
Yeah.
But other games I've seen, like Apex, for example, the microtransactions that you buy that are weapons aren't actually a weapon. You're buying a skin for that weapon.
Okay.
Like Apex has, as generally as part of their battle pass, but also as part of like their store, they have skins for weapons. You're not buying that specific weapon. There's no guarantee you're going to get it in the match or anything like that. You're just buying a skin so that when you pick up the weapon in game, it looks like how the microtransaction you just bought looks. Fortnite also has skins for their weapon. It's the same thing. The real thing is just that, like, cheaters may be ruining some of them, but I don't know about bad teammates, because that's just luck of the draw. Like, you can always get bad teammates. Like, I'm not a fan of Overwatch. Most people know this, but how many times have you played an Overwatch match and had most of your team not care about the objective?
Spoilers, me, never. Because you haven't played Overwatch.
Okay, but generally, everybody knows the experience of having your teammates not give a flying fuck about the objective.
I have experienced that in Battlefront. And that's been difficult to deal with. Like, people not, like, just staring at the flowers and not paying attention to what's going on, what they're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And it's just, that's how people are. Some people just want to play a multiplayer game with friends, and they don't care about the objective. They just want to kill other teams and do that. And like, yeah, you might consider that a bad teammate, but to them, they're having the time of their life. So has it ruined the genre? I'm going to say no. But again, that's a personal opinion. And honestly, most of the FPS games I play are single player anyways. Like, I'll be over there playing Wolfenstein or, you know, the single player campaign for Titanfall, maybe Titanfall 2, which is good. Or like Dishonored or Deathloop. Like, there's, you know, like, there's not a lot of FPS games I play where like I have to worry about a multiplayer component.
That makes sense. I think it's weird because there are a lot of first person shooters. The decline is such a weird thing. I think first person shooters, multiplayer, is all in the decline. That's because, but it's not because necessarily because evolve these things. I think that there are certain elements of them, like Call of Duty's declining a little bit. And that's the bit, I would say that's the biggest one, correct?
I mean, it is, but also it's just like people did not like Vanguard's multiplayer which is why it's on the decline.
That's what I'm saying. It's declining for quality. Like, what's the other one that Battlefield was terrible?
Oh, Battlefield 2042 is on a whole other league of its own.
So you can make an argument that first person shooters in general on the decline. People are kind of waiting for Overwatch 2 right now, so Overwatch is not as prevalent as it once was. So you can make the argument it's on the decline, but I don't think it's on the decline because of those quote-unquote things that's going on. It's more or less like we're just in a lull period for those type of things. Apex is Apex. People are playing Apex. People are loving Apex. It may get time for a new season of Apex to come up. I would probably want to say people are loving Destiny. So Destiny's
Apex just started their new season. So
okay, there we go. So I haven't heard anything about it. I don't know if that's good or bad or not.
Maybe I'm not in those circles. The reason you haven't heard anything about it is because the thing that actually got news was its third anniversary. So
okay, I got you. But then again, Destiny is an example of a first person shooter that is killing it right now. People are loving that. Devs loving the new season of Destiny.
Oh, yeah, he is.
So for every story of a Call of Duty in its decline, there's a Destiny out there. So it's really interesting. I like first-person shooters. I'm not a big fan of multiplayer and stuff like that. I have played them. People think I haven't played any multiplayer games in my life. No, I've played them before. I played Call of Duty multiplayer at one point in time. I haven't played any of the current ones. I played Fortnite, which is not a first-person shooter, but I played Fortnite several times. I played some of these games. I used to play Battlefront a lot because I like Star Wars. But yeah, really interesting. Any more things you got to say before we go, Haley?
No, just that we'll be back soon with another episode.
That is good. Thank you guys for listening to this week's episode. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at
it's PlayStation XP on Twitter, like X and then P on Twitter. And our Twitter handles, I'm at Shepard Zarel, Delvin's at Delvin_Cox.
Thank you. I can tell you what I want to plan on doing because I'm still trying to work it out. But what I want to do is eventually we're going to have an email where you can email us your questions and things like that. And we'll have a voicemail segment as well. The problem I've had is when I got to talk to Dev about it. But we can talk about this later offline. But
yeah,
when I try to register our email, it's already being used. So I'm assuming we already have an email. So once I find out our email address, we will use that email. And you guys can email us your questions anytime you want us to. And you can send us voicemail so we can have a voicemail segment as well. We're working on that. That's coming. Thank you guys for listening.
We're also going to try and get that episode with Kevin here at some point as well, because Kev got sick. And we'd promised to have Kev on because he was excited to join and then he got sick. And we'll maybe look at having some other third chairs on some episodes too.
Oh, almost forgot. Thank you for mentioning that. Kev was on a recent episode of Delvin Cox Experience.
Yes.
So it's going to be coming out soon. So be on the lookout for that. Really soon, actually.
Yeah.
So with that being said, long live play.